We may be deep in an especially frigid part of the winter, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't hide. That doesn't mean we should hide indoors, because there's a tremendous amount of things to do outdoors. And this hour, we're going to give a little preview of some of those activities to be enjoyed, and we're going to learn about a push to get more women involved in fly fishing. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side Outside. I'm joined in studio by a whole gang of people this hour. First, I'd like to welcome the outdoor guys, and that includes Joe Knight, outdoor writer for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. And Joe, if you can reach the mic, thanks so much for being here.
Pleased to be here. We might be jumping the gun a little bit to be talking about fly fishing outside yet.
But. Well, I know. It's happy thoughts.
Early trout season starts in March, though. So.
You can go to Minnesota and fish now. And Iowa's open year-round.
And also one of the outdoor guys is here, of course. Dave just made himself known on the microphone. Dave Carlson is host of the syndicated TV program Northland Adventures. Dave, thanks for being here as well.
Glad to be here always, Rich.
And we've got some special guests this hour, and they are a group of three women who are pushing to get more gals involved in fly fishing, and they'll be giving a presentation this evening at 7 o'clock at Gander Mountain in Eau Claire on that very subject. They are Wendy Williamson, Sarah Sanford, and Margaret Labine. Thank you very much for being here, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here.
And as always, we want our callers and listeners to be involved in the program. To chime in to our discussion, give us a call this hour at 800-228-5615. That number again, 800-228-5615. You can also post a question, comment, whatever, on the West Side Facebook page. We like to get feedback. It lets us know that people are out there and they're listening. So, women and fly fishing, it's, I guess, one of those stereotypes that you don't, it's kind of breaking a stereotype. And I guess we should go through the guests here and get a little bit of who they are and why and how they got involved with fly fishing. Sarah Sanford, let's start with you.
Thanks a lot. I'm actually a Minnesota resident, and so I know that you can fish in Minnesota right now. Get out there where the water is not too hard.
Sure.
I mean, otherwise you're going to have to cut a trough in the ice, and landing your fly in that trough on the lake, that's just too hard. So try a stream in southeast Minnesota, or one of the ones he was talking about in Iowa. So let's see. What did you want to know? Fishing, me, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Fished with my dad when I was a kid, and had some friends really singing the praises of fly fishing maybe 15 years or so ago. And they were so excited about it, so enamored of it, that I just had to find out what it was all about. My folks were outdoors people, and I'd done a lot of canoeing, a little bit of fishing, and tried out fly fishing. And even though I didn't catch a fish for, I don't know, a year, I stuck with it. I kept doing it because being out there and being on the water and seeing all the things that live in the water and above the water and all around me, it was like being alive in 360 degrees all at once. It was just great. So
I don't want to interject here. Sarah's no stranger to Western Wisconsin. She's led a cleanup effort on the very famous Rush River for a number of years.
Thanks for mentioning that.
And she's done a lot of work. She's not a taker alone of fish and trout. She's a putting back, so that's cool.
Very cool.
Do you want to plug your date for this
year? Oh, yeah. April 20th, Earth Day, is the Rush River cleanup. It will be our ninth cleanup. We expect around 200 volunteers, and we clean 25 miles of fishable trout water in Wisconsin.
It's amazing. I don't want to take up too much time, but what do you find?
All kinds of stuff.
I bet.
Think the first year, the prize for the strangest find was a deer with a lawn chair in his antlers.
Oh, jeez.
Margaret, I know you're a fly fishing instructor.
I am. I'm coming in at this time of my life, which is very typical, I think, for women in fly fishing, almost turning 60. When I was in Idaho, I think I was about 59 at the time, I was playing golf there. I did that for most of my life, and I always liked sports that you could play with a stick. As it turned out, that particular tournament, it was raining, so I found myself walking up and down the streets of Ketchum, Idaho, and there was a sign on a store that said Outfitters, and I think at the time I probably thought I need a new outfit, and I was going to go in and buy a new skirt. And when I walked in and here were these long fishing poles, I happened to ask one of the salespeople what it was, and he said it's a fly rod. And so they had a new young guide there that they had just hired, and he said, you want to go and try it out? So the next thing I knew, I was in a pair of waders that were about 2 feet too long, and we were on the Big Wood River, and it was my, of course, I was with a guide, so I caught a fish right away, and I thought, this is awesome. So I went home and thought I would start fly fishing, but I had no idea how to get started, where to go. And as it turned out, someone pointed out to me that there was a fly shop in downtown St. Paul's, or in St. Paul. So I went there and I opened up my wallet and gave them all my money, and I got outfitted with all the best stuff. And then the next thing I figured out I had to do was learn how to fish. So for me, it was a very much a trial and error thing. I think ultimately we all come to fly fishing and teaching ourselves how to fish, but a little guided learning is a great thing. But there weren't any other women around that I knew that I could find that were fishing, and I wanted to have a buddy. So I went to a fly fishing expo in Minneapolis in about 2006, and lo and behold, there was Wendy, and there was Sarah. Sarah was tying flies, and Wendy was a part of a women's program. It inspired me a lot to see other women coming to this, and I think as a result of that, it became apparent to me that there were other women who wanted to learn to do this. Any women, any young women, old women, any women, in any kind of shape, any kind of condition in life, who didn't have husbands or fathers or boyfriends or brothers or a grandparent to teach them. So we banded together and found ourselves a little intimidated at first because we didn't have equipment that fit us. Mm-hmm. As the industry has changed quite a bit in the last 5 or 6 years now, and so it's easier for women to find each other and to find good equipment that will allow them to get out there and have a great experience. So that's kind of my story.
You mentioned Wendy Williamson.
Yes.
She not only, who's here today, she not only fishes and fly fishes and teaches fly fishing. She and her husband, Larry Mann, run the business up in Hayward, the Hayward Fly Fishing Company. That's, what, 7 or 8 years now?
It's actually, we're into year 9.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been fly fishing, and when did your emphasis shift to the whole gamut of fish that you can fish?
I'm much like Margaret in that I didn't come from a fly fishing family, so I didn't have a grandparent or anyone to teach me. And I was telling Joe when we talked about the article in the paper that my inspiration was Kurt Gowdy on American Sportsman. I saw that, and I'm like, now that's the job to have. There's one slight problem. I'm a girl, but oh well, we'll see. So, and it took many years of, self-taught or really bad teachers, and it was a long process. But in 95, I had... It's good enough to be referred to a lodge out west, and that was my foot in the door. And it was the only reason I was asked to be a part of that was because I was a woman, and they were looking for a woman on the staff. And so that was for trout. And then it happened that my father passed away. We moved back to Hayward. And in the meantime, we heard all this buzz about warm water, you know, bass and muskie. And we came back. It was kind of twofold, to be with my mom, and then we came back and cracked the code on that. So we now guide for bass and muskies and run the fly shop.
And it's some super bass and muskie fishing. They're some of the best to be found anywhere.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. You know, the hard statistics on this, there are about 60 million people in this country who fish. I'm not sure the percentage of them are trout anglers, but it's not probably more than maybe 20% or 30%, somewhere in there. But the group that represents the cold water fishermen, the species, and their mission being the conservation of cold water resources, Trout Unlimited, they've got about 145,000 members, 400-some chapters across the country, yet only 6% of that membership are women. And now, 2013, they're putting a major effort to recruit more women to this organization. they're a great organization. You don't want to run them down, but why haven't they recruited? Why now? Give me your take on it.
One of the things is that women don't know what fun it can be to be a part of a Trout Unlimited chapter. They're not huge in education about teaching people how to fish or teaching people how to tie flies, but they can put you in touch with the people who can do that. But one way I met our friend Duke Welter is by volunteering for a habitat improvement project on Gilbert Creek. And I've volunteered for similar projects all around the upper Midwest here. I learned how to pull old bunches of barbed wire out of the creek side so that the stream side could be improved for people to safely fish there. And I have learned how to build lunker structures, which are places where fish can hide, and in the process learned how to use a nail gun and a chainsaw. It's just a hoot. I don't know if a lot of other women would think that was a good time, but I thought it was very empowering. And they've been useful skills to me. But mainly, it feels like I'm taking care of something that has taken care of me and has taken care of people for generations. And in the process of doing this habitat improvement work for Trout Unlimited. So, ladies, I got to tell you, there's room for you in TU, and there are fun things to do, and there are other people to meet who might share some needs that that you have.
Margaret, I got to ask you, TU, why now? Why women?
Well, I'm not sure why now, except that I think the powers that be in TU have recognized that there's been a growing movement, especially for women in fly fishing. Part of the industry, I think, was worried, particularly during the economic downturn, that the sport was dwindling and that fewer people were buying fishing licenses, et cetera. And they really geared up to start making good gear for women, and as it became apparent that in some groups where fewer people were fly fishing, women were coming in droves. So I think TU is now recognizing that. It's not a criticism of them. I was a board member for TU for a long time, and I did notice that very few women came on their own to meetings or were less interested in it, because I think they perceived that they already had to know how to do something before they could come, and they didn't see a way for them to go down and restore streams. They didn't see how that was even relevant to the situation. But I think the confluence, a number of things have come together. And if you want to say that there's a growing environmental movement, there's been more interest in the science of maybe just taking care of the environment, women becoming more engaged in the outdoors in general, but they're coming, and I think TU has noticed it, and I think it's to their credit that they're wanting to bring more women in.
I think one of the issues with the ladies is that definitely the intimidation of being around a bunch of men, and I know Joe quoted me in the paper as saying a bunch of old gray-haired men, and you can't see this, but I am one of them, one of the old guys, and it's almost like it would be step two when we get these women that come and take the classes, and they're all excited about it. They don't know what the next step is. It would be like the Waiting Women group or TU. It could be that second step for them.
I want to let our listeners know that you're listening to the West Side Outside. We're talking this half hour about women in fly fishing and getting more of them involved. We are joined by Margaret Labine, Sarah Sanford, Wendy Williamson, three longtime fly fisher women. And if you'd like to give a call and ask a question or give a comment for these ladies, please do. The number is 800-228-5615. Again, that number is 800-228-5615. I've got a question, and I'll ask Wendy. We mentioned, or it was mentioned earlier, that the equipment didn't really fit, and it's gone through a change the industry has, and it's been more accommodating. What other kind of are there any obstacles out there besides just maybe the intimidation or the person themselves?
I would say, and Margaret touched on that now there are, like waders that fit and appropriate clothing. You have to admit that the rods are made for men. Mm-hmm. There are a few companies that make them for women. But other than maybe just the fact that women simply don't have the strength that men do, It will come into play, say, if you're using a heavier weight rod and doing a lot of casting, but more it's real obvious, say, in a waiting situation, you know, just the physical strength needed to, but that's about it.
Joe, you've taught women fly fishing techniques, casting. I know you have. And I've done a little bit in it for Becoming an Outdoors Woman program myself for the Turkey Federation.
These women don't allow men in their workshops.
No.
There was less quality control.
I noticed that women do not overpower the rod. It's a little bit more delicate, and they pick up on things. Guys, they grab a rod, and they got to throw it like a musky casting rod.
Women listen, too.
And women listen.
They probably are more coachable. It's hard to make generalizations across gender, but probably a little more coachable, probably. Maybe a little more fun to fish with because they don't have that macho thing. You know, I caught a bigger fish than that just down the corner, you know. So
what's the first step getting in besides, you know, go to the Internet and look up Trout Unlimited and join? It's more than that, though.
Yes. I think the best thing to do is go. There are several sources that no matter where your listeners are listening, you can find. Either a Federation of Fly Fishing chapter. This is an international group that teaches fly tying and casting. Look there. Go to Trout Unlimited. There are chapters all over the country. Those are easily found on the website. Find one that's close to you, close to a river you fish. Go that way. Go to the DNR. The DNR has Becoming Outdoors Women's programs. I teach through there. You can go to any state in the country, and you'll find a fly fishing instructor now. It didn't used to be the case, but you can now. Wisconsin, I think, is maybe the beginning. I think Becoming an Outdoor Woman program actually started here, so
yes,
there's lots of chapters here. You can go to your community ed. You can go to your local parks. You go to the National Park System, nps.gov. You can go to... the fly shops, go there. That's the best place. That's where I got my start. So,
yes,
there's lots of entrees for ways to get in.
Margaret, do we need in Wisconsin a fly fishing women of Wisconsin similar to the fly fishing women of Minnesota? And what do you do in that group?
The fly fishing women of Minnesota started, we actually are carpetbaggers. We fish mostly in Wisconsin. So, yes, there's plenty of room for us. But we have regular outings. Last Saturday, I taught a group of women in one of the indoor soccer domes in Minneapolis. We had a long waiting list to get into that. So we fish, do casting education year-round. The casting education, I think you have to start with that. It's the physical skill of fly fishing, and you do have to know a little bit to be operational on a stream. Once you get past that, though, then it's just experience. Like anything else you do, you just keep repeating it and doing it over and over again. And you'll find people, other women along the streams, you'll find them in these meetings. They're everywhere. So if you're looking for a buddy, it's not hard.
Yeah, I got to say, some of the casting techniques are as easy as unhooking the cord from your vacuum from the edge of your couch.
Yes.
You're just making that kind of a rolling flip. And you can cast a fly just by doing that simple motion. And also, don't be intimidated that you have to fish for one particular kind of fish. You don't have to be on a trout stream. You don't need to be near blue ribbon water to do some fly casting. You can do that out on the grass in front of your house. You can also cast for bluegills and crappies and bass and sharks and
carp
and just all kinds of stuff. So.
Okay, at 7 o'clock tonight at the Gander Mountain Store in Eau Claire, you're going to be talking to the Clearwaters chapter of Trout Unlimited. I'll bet that 90% of your audience is going to be men. What are you going to tell them?
I'm going to tell them to go home. Just no. We're just going to tell them and share our experience of how much fun we have doing this, and to encourage them to bring the women in their lives into this wonderful sport.
Any other thoughts?
Well, the meeting is free, we should say. So if anyone hears this and they're curious,
yeah. I just have to say thank you, because there wouldn't have been a way for me to learn what I'd learned if it hadn't been for mentoring along the way. And because it has been a traditionally male-oriented sport, it's all been men up until very, very recently. It's probably of all sports that I've ever played.
How How has it changed your life, is what I'm going to say, as briefly as you can describe it. I know you talked about how you all got into it, but mm-hmm. how has it changed your life since then, as briefly mm-hmm. as you can tell us?
My world's just richer and fuller.
Well, fly fishing has become a way of life for me, and I've heard other people say that. I can't remember a time when there was no fly fishing. I'm always fishing in my mind, and it has brought me some of the greatest experiences, most beautiful places in the world to go, and some of the greatest people that I've ever met. So,
Wendy?
I think of all the years that I spent working for dentists, I got to tell you, this is a much better job.
Can I give a quick historical note? Maybe the first published outdoor writer was a woman, Dame Julian.
Yeah, that's right.
She fished with a fly rod and a silk line, fishing quartering downstream. So,
yeah.
1400, 1500?
Yeah.
Something like that.
She led the way.
Well, very cool. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Margaret Levine, Sarah Sanford, Wendy Williamson, you're doing great work. Keep it up. And tonight at 7 o'clock at the Gander Mountain Store in Eau Claire off of 93.
That's right, in the community room. And it's free, like Joe said, too. So,
all right. Thank you so much. We're going to take our first break here on the West Side Outside, let these women get ready for their presentation, and we'll be back with Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. We're going to talk about the ice fishing weekend free, that is, and also talk a little bit about ski jumping this weekend and whatever else falls on our plate. You're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Two associates within the UW River Falls Archives Department join us to talk about the digital collection of historical data. Jim Oliver has a look at the Barron Spotlighter's portrayal of Frost Nixon, opening soon. A preview of the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony Concerto Competition Finals and the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra's Saturday Concert. And a UW Stout Professor's Pride in a Student-Run Health Clinic. It's a very interesting salad this week and every Friday on Spectrum West. 5 p.m. tomorrow on this station of the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin Carbone Cancer Center, with more than 280 physicians and researchers serving Wisconsin and the region. On the web at uwhealth.org/cancer.
Support also comes from the Eau Claire Children's Theater, presenting the Broadway musical based on the children's book The Secret Garden at the State Theater from January 31st through February 3rd. Details are available online at ecct.org.
Welcome back to the West Side Outside here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. And I'm joined in studio by the Outdoor Guys. That's Joe Knight. He's the outdoor writer and outdoor editor of the outdoor section for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Is in studio. Also, we're joined by Dave Carlson, host of the syndicated TV program Northland Adventures. And you just heard from Margaret Levine, Sarah Sanford, and Wendy Williamson, three women, putting on a presentation tonight about getting women involved in fly fishing. I had a little bit of a error when I was telling about where it is. Of course, the Gander Mountain Store is on Highway 53, not Highway 93. I don't know what I was thinking. But gentlemen, we've got this weekend, what I understand is as the first free ice fishing weekend, at least in recent memory. Any big plans? You guys going to be out covering this event, Joel?
I think I'll be cross-country skiing, actually. I'm more of a fair-weather ice fisherman.
Oh, yeah.
About March, about the time the red-winged blackbirds are back and everyone else goes out for the early trout season, that's when I start trout fishing more, ice fishing more.
Where are you going to be ice skiing? Skiing, Joel.
Probably the Upper Peninsula.
Okay. Best snow condition up
there. Yeah. Although I was out to Tower Ridge earlier in the week, and it was on the flats. They had groomed it, and it was skiable quite fast, actually, although maybe not ideal conditions. And
Icy?
The hills are dangerous. To stay off the hills.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just I'm curious.
Yeah, and you go much farther south. I mean, we are, I guess, lucky to have any snow. You go much farther south, and it's just
really
bare.
Really spotty. Yeah. Well, ice fishing this weekend, Joe. Young people, old people, men, women. I wonder how many newcomers will be out there.
I don't know. This was created by act of the legislature.
I think it's part of the Sporting Heritage Act, isn't it?
I believe so. We do have a similar kind of a long-standing summertime free fishing weekend, usually the first weekend in June. And with that, a lot of little fishing clinics have sprung up. In fact, I've helped Dennis Vandenbloemen usually has one down in Half Moon Lake with his merry band of volunteers, and Lake Halley, Optimus usually have one on Lake Halley. This is so new that nothing like that has, no one's had time to organize anything like that, and I don't know if it's quite as feasible in the winter when it can be chilly.
Well, the best thing to do, I would think, is try to hook up with somebody. If you're brand new to this, you just don't walk out on the ice and punch a hole with a hammer or something.
No.
You should go out with somebody who has an auger, some fishing rods, obviously. You might want to check around with some of the sport shops to just ask them, you know, is there some kind of opportunity for me? And start talking up among friends, even though it's just a couple of days away. And you don't need a license, obviously. That's why we're saying it's free. Mm-hmm. And you can enjoy the wonders of ice fishing. And you know, it is a lot of fun. I can always remember as my kids when they were little, they would tolerate it up to a point, you know. And that was the time where there wasn't nearly the clothing or the ice fishing gear. There were no Vexilars and so forth. And you had the old ice scoops, you know, to dig your holes or to chisel out holes. You just had a ice spud. And now we've got these fancy augers and everything. But the kids, they sat there and they jiggled their little rods. And yes, sometimes they caught fish. But a lot of other times it was just taking out the ice skates, shoveling off the snow. They got some ice skating in. They ran down hills. You know, they tumbled around. They chased leaves across the ice when they were blown by the wind, you know. And it's a good place to do it. And the ice is pretty safe now, wouldn't you say,
yeah,
Joe?
Yeah, I think they could probably drive on. Well, depending on the lake, DNR will tell you ice is never safe. But if you look out on Marshmiller Lake and you see 200 cars out there, you might think,
maybe. That's a good sign.
One thing, if they do go to a real popular lake like Marshmiller Lake or Prairie Lake up by Chautauqua, they will find a lot of people out, especially on Saturday when the weather's supposed to be pretty nice, and a lot of holes already drilled in the ice, or they may even request, you know, ice fishermen are generally a pretty social bunch, and they could say, hey, I'm just new to ice fishing, and I'm trying it this weekend. Could you drill a hole for me? And
so you mentioned, Dave, that you didn't have the Vexilar. This is a question. I mean, what kind of ice fisherman are you, both of you? Do you do the 5-gallon bucket and waxies, or do you do the Vexilar and the fancy ice mansion, or what's your take on all that? On the fact that it's gotten so souped up, I guess.
Yeah, Joe.
Well, I'm very primitive. I was, I have two especially when it comes to ice fishing. Mm-hmm. I have two aging mentors who are very old school. In fact, one fellow still fishes with a small fiberglass pole and just two pegs to wrap the line around. And I'm about at that stage too. I think, and I have the 5-gallon bucket. I have an ice skimmer. Another reason I like to fish late is I'm too lazy to drill holes, and if you go in March, usually they won't freeze overnight, so you can just kick them open with your heel and skim them out. And also, the fish are usually more active then. So,
I haven't gone off the deep end like some have. I do have a ice shack, a little pop up thing. I've got a Vexilar, an early model one. I've got some rods and reels and so forth, and some tip ups and. I've got a sled. I'll throw it all in the sled. I've got a power auger now, but I also have a hand auger, too. I have made several trips into the boundary waters, and you can't use power augers there. Mm. There are other places, too, where you can go in Wisconsin where there are wilderness areas, small, albeit nothing like the compared to the size of the boundary waters, but there it's all hand. You know, you can drill your holes by hand. I did some checking today. It's going to be obviously bitterly cold, at least on Sunday and on into the Monday. So half the weekend might be too cold to fish outside of a shack in the open. But I did some checking today and kind of taking listeners from the north to the south up on Shawamigan Bay. The coho bite has not started yet. They're catching lots of perch, gazillions of them, but they're 4 to 6 inches. If you work hard and do some sorting and get into the right hole, you might wind up with 10, 11, 12s, perch, that is. Mm-hmm. That's off Second Landing up by Ashland. Inland, you know, it's spotty from that point south. They are catching walleyes on the St. Louis Bay of the western part of Lake Superior early in the morning, right at dusk. They are catching bluegills, I'm told some pretty decent one on Polk and Barron County lakes. But once again, it might be three or four to a hole, and then it goes dead, like somebody threw a firecracker down there. Mm-hmm. The fish disappear. Move to another hole, three or four there. I think on the Mississippi River, until this cold weather came around, it's not ice fishing, obviously, but it is fishing. They were doing pretty well on walleyes and sauger below Red Wing and Alma. In the backwaters, they were catching on through the ice perch and bluegills as well. Over by Petenwell and Castle Rock and those places, they're starting to get out and get walleyes. The ice conditions, of course, always vary, but I've heard it anywhere from a foot to 18 inches now. But once again, like Joe said, ice is never safe, ice is never even, and you get around the creek inlets or outflows, anywhere there's moving water. Certainly telltale places along shore, spring areas, where you can see it. The water looks open, and it is open because mm-hmm. there's a spring flowing in or close to the surface. Stay away from those areas. So
if you're not used to being on the ice, a good rule of thumb is to go where the other people go. Mm-hmm. Don't explore too much.
I'll tell you, I love ice fishing, but I'm not one of the types that gets out there as soon as there's a crust of ice. You know, I've got some friends that really risk it when they go out there because they're just so nuts about it, and I respect that. But boy, oh boy, I mean, I need at least a foot or something to feel right. You know, I'm just kind of a baby about that.
We've got an interesting story coming up this week. I've caught these fish before. They're called eel pout, also burbot or lawyer. They're a freshwater cod, an inland cod. They're found in the Great Lakes region. Actually, they're found in a lot of reservoirs and big lakes across the country. We went out on the St. Louis River. In fact, it was the day after Christmas to tape this little episode, but It was a real hoot going after these fish. The ice at that time on the river was 6 to 8 inches, and of course it was a river, and fishing a current, you can see your line drift off to the. So I did walk where others walked and nowhere else, because it is a moving river. But about an hour before sunset, and right when the water of the line went straight down, the current stopped. The fish started to move. They come in beneath the ice to spawn out of Lake Superior, and they do get up to 10, 15 pounders. The biggest I caught was about 26, 27 inches.
Ooh, that's
or
a
so.
Big one.
Yeah, and they're kind of interesting. They curl around your arm like a little python or something when you catch them.
Weird.
Yeah, but they're
actually related to cod, aren't they? I've had them from Shawamigan Bay, and they aren't too bad to eat, although. Mm.
And I'll pass along their recipe. They gave it to me. You take a frying pan and fill it with a liter of Sprite.
No.
Yes. Let that come to a boil. take your chunked eel pout, little chunk, bite-sized chunks, drop them in there, and they say when they come floating up, they're done. Mm. Get your butter melted, toothpick, put it through the chunk of cod and have at it. It's delicious.
Wow, that's something.
They call it the poor man's lobster. That's what it's historically known as, the poor man's lobster.
How about getting on Lake Superior fishing for lake trout at all? Have you ever done that, guys?
I've done it. It's kind of a specialized thing. That's one thing where I would go with a pro. I went with an old timer and we took a snowmobile out. And you really need a tent out there because if it's windy at all, it's going to be very cold.
But
it's
you're
brutal.
Using like.
Yeah, and you're
using wire,
we were
aren't you?
Jigging way down, or what do you call it? We just hand lined it.
Bobbing sticks.
Bobbing, they call it, with a hunk of fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're fishing, you can be fishing really deep there.
A couple hundred feet at least.
Well, right now, no one can get out there because there is no ice.
Yeah.
I was told today there is some ice between Bayfield and Madeline Island, but south winds and temperatures in the 30s tomorrow and Saturday, stronger south winds tomorrow, that could change that very quickly. But they just haven't been able to get out. Maybe perhaps around February there might be a couple, three-week window where it'll happen, where the cold will be consistent. That's everybody I talked to said it started and then it stopped. Mm-hmm. It started and it stopped. It was good and then it really tapered off right along with the weather. There's not been that consistency yet in the weather, and a solid freeze and okay, we're into it, and the fish. You know, midwinter fishing always slows down, if you will. And like Joe says, March it picks up again.
That's why if the legislature had asked me, which they rarely ask me about anything, but I would have had it a little later in late February or maybe even early March. I guess you start getting the ice may start getting a little iffy, but
sure.
A little bit warmer weather and the chance for the fish to be a little bit more active. This time of year, it's usually an early morning bite and an evening bite. Well, I'm usually talking about bluegills, crappies, panfish.
You talked about waxies and stuff. That has been a traditional bait, and you've heard all the jokes about keeping them fresh inside the lip of your mouth and all those things. But that doesn't really happen, does it, Joe? I don't know.
I haven't, and some of them, depending on what they feed them, there's some of those little wigglers you really don't want to have them in your mouth.
No,
these are all usually immature insects. Mm-hmm. And when I was starting out, when I was a kid, the way we'd get bait fried fishing is we'd go to a vacant field with some goldenrods, and we'd take the galls and cut them open, and you found if the chickadees didn't beat you to it, you'd find these little goldenrod grubs.
Hmm. I had, and I've seen these on the market for a number of years now, but it's of late it's really caught on, and these are micro baits. They're plastics. They're molded, very light, very pliable, they're smooth, and they fit on just about any jig you want to throw down there, and they're artificial. And the guys tell me, and my experience was what they told me, they'll catch dozens of bait, these artificials. And I think, I don't know what the cost, I'm not an agent for anybody, but I think it's like $1.50 or $3 or something like that. And they'll catch a bunch of baits. Well, that's, you know, you look at the cost of the live baits, certainly minnows and suckers, fathead minnows and suckers are really expensive at stores because of the transportation costs. I think anything else, you know, like ice fishing, anything else, you can spend as much on it as you want. And when you do start buying these things, it can get pricey. So while I was buying some ice fishing baits the other day, I looked at musky baits. So and you're talking $15, $20, $25 for a single musky bait. Wow.
It is something you can do without a big investment, though.
It is.
I just have the bucket and a handful of teardrop jigs and pick up a box of waxies for $1.50. Or you can even try plastics. I have one of my older mentors, Ed Solon, loves to just fish with a little plastic jig, and he'll outfish me all the time. I'm using real food, real bait, and he'll be just, you know, hauling up the bluegills. It's kind of fun to watch these experienced old ice fishermen, too, who go without the Wexlers. They're just kind of like, they have a second sense, like a zen-like thing, where somehow they know, even though the line just moved the tiniest little bit, they know there's a fish down there. And, you can be sitting right next to them, and they'll be catching fish. And
experience and knowledge. You're listening to the West Side Outside. I'm joined in studio by Joe Knight of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures. If you'd like to get in on the conversation about ice fishing or what you're planning on doing outdoors this weekend in general, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. We've got a big ski jumping competition coming up this weekend. Joe, I see you've got your button already. So you're ready to go.
I'm supporting the cause, yeah. I'm afraid I'll be out of town when it's going on. But you should really have Ron Buckley here. He's the local media expert on ski jumping, a former ski jumper himself. But
Is he the one that does he does the announcing during the event?
No, he does a lot of he's supposed to be retired, but he keeps coming back. He does a lot of he'll write a series of columns about the young skiers, especially who are going to be going out there. I think he covered him at the Lake Placid Olympics. He's one of the few U.S. Sports writers who actually knows anything about the sport.
And I'll be honest, I had no idea that it was this big of a deal in the Eau Claire area until I went last year, and it was a heck of a time.
What are the conditions on the hill? Are they obviously it's cool enough to make snow and keep it?
Yeah, yeah.
It looks pretty good.
Well, they've
been making
it for quite a while and stockpiling it there. Yeah, I saw Bob Jackson at noon, who is helping out there, and Bob Schneider rather, and he was actually putting out little pine boughs on the hill. So when these skiers are soaring through the air, they can actually see these little pine needles, and they'll know the different points on the hill, the different lengths of the hill. So when they should start putting out their landing gear and getting ready to come down.
We've got a caller on the line. I think we should go there. And I'm not sure who is on the line, but you're on the air. And what's up this weekend? Hello?
Hi there. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we are. You're on the air.
Wonderful. Well, my name is Kelly, and I'm calling from Polk County. Mm-hmm. And I just had a chance to jump in my car here and hear the topic of a conversation. I was reminded of a fabulous ice fishing story that involved my dad and a couple of his buddies years ago.
Okay.
And so if you can picture a couple of guys in an ice house up on Trade Lake near Grantsburg and in that area. And they looked outside, realized, it's starting to snow. And so what a lovely idea. They figured if they're going to get snowbound and be out on the lake ice fishing, that they needed their extra buddy, Arnie. So my dad told Jim, you go to the house and fix up some chili, bring it back. I'll go to Dresser, Wisconsin, and pick up Arnie, and I'll meet you back here. So I just love the fact that here these guys decided if they're going to get snowed in, they need supplies and their extra buddy. And then they proceeded to keep ice fishing. Mm. And they knew, just as you were describing, that if there was just a hint of a nibble on the end of that line, boy, there was a fish that's going to be in a fry pan.
Do you ice fish yourself?
You know, a couple of times we have. One story involving my husband and his younger brother and our three boys. And we made ourselves a little ice house, little ice fishing shack, had it out on Lake Wapagasset. And we were all packed in there. We're talking six people in the little, you know, 4x8, use the plywood sheets to make a little, you know, thing. So you got a kid on the lap. Everybody's got a line in some hole, maybe two or three lines down one hole. And some guy comes along and he's just checking in. It wasn't DNR, just
a guy on the lake,
seeing how everybody's doing. And he opens up the door and he sees us all packed in there. And he hollers to his buddy, "Hey Joe, you got to see this. They're packed in here like squirrels."
It was your ice fishing Hilton.
It's just fun, and I know that two out of our three boys are ice fishermen. One is going over to Bay Lake Resort on the east side of the state this weekend with some friends. Hmm. And the other one does a lot of fishing down around South St. Paul, actually.
Excellent, excellent. Are you going out for the free fishing or taking anybody out yourself?
Oh, I had a difficult time hearing you. I'm so sorry. What?
Oh, are you going to be taking anybody out, or are you going out yourself since it's a free ice fishing weekend?
Well, I haven't been ice fishing, and right now I don't have plans. I don't think I'd want to be on the lake this weekend when I'm hearing the wind chills. I might be getting a little wussy in my older years, mm-hmm. but I am considering going north to see if we can find some snow with our snowmobiles. So we'll still be enjoying the outdoors somehow.
Where are you headed with the snowmobiles? Give us a little tip.
Well, I'll let you get on to your other callers and your good conversations. And the best thing that you can do is just take a kid fishing.
And
with that, it's not an ice fishing derby, but in June, up here on Deer Lake, east of St. Croix Falls, in memory of my dad, Neil McKenzie, a lot of family and friends in the Polk County Sportsman's Club, 10 years ago, after Dad died suddenly, they started up the Neil McKenzie Youth Fishing Derby.
Oh,
and it's
wonderful.
Simply with the concept of keeping kids fishing, and we get people out there with volunteer guides and pontoons and get everybody on the lake that wouldn't normally have the opportunity.
Well, that's great. Well, so, thank you so much for the call. And
you bet. You guys take care. Thanks for letting me just share a story, tell you like an old Polk County
great
citizen.
Great story.
Great story.
Thank you.
Good night. And anyone else that has a story, give us a call, or if you just want to chat with the outdoor guys, the number is 800-228-5615.
One phenomenon we have in Wisconsin is the community ice fishing contest, which is more about socializing than about seriously trying to catch fish. And mm-hmm. more so in February, a lot of little communities will have a two-hour ice fishing contest.
Right.
They'll have food, and there'll be families out there, and... Maybe some people catch fish, maybe not, but it's generally a thing to get together in the middle of winter.
Yeah, prizes sometimes for biggest fish and smallest fish. I mean, it's a lot of fun. And socializing, I mean, that's the majority of what it's about for me. I mean, I like to go and just be hanging out outside with my buddies.
One of the weekends in February, speaking about eel pout earlier, one of the weekends in February is Walker, Minnesota hosts the Eel Pout Festival over there, International Eel Pout Festival. And they'll drill thousands of holes out on Gull Lake and some of these other lakes up there. And it's quite an event. It's a big time. It's been around for years, I guess. Joe's right, though, those little weekend ice fishing contests for the Lions clubs or some youth organization is they're part of the ice fishing traditions in Wisconsin, have been for years.
Mm-hmm. They aren't necessarily from 1 to 3 on a Sunday afternoon is not necessarily the time the fish are going to be biting, but that's
no.
When
right. Yeah. Dave, I didn't ask you, are you going to be at the ski jump this weekend?
No, don't really think so. I'm not, but I know it's a wonderful event and a lot of festivities. If you get tired of watching the skiers come down, there are some pretty good things going on into the tents, right, Joe, by the campfires?
I think they're going to have a band Saturday, and now have an ice fishing, or not an ice fishing on the brain, and it's hockey, like a 3-on-3
pond hockey. They do, and... the Dweebs is the band that's going to be playing, and I don't know much about them, but I've heard that they're pretty well known in this area.
Oh, yeah, I've heard them perform. They do an outstanding job.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have a youth cross-country ski race there for the little people. That may be the only place around that has good snow.
Oh, okay.
And I think they're going to have a component for, there's something called the Nordic Combined, where you ski jump. And then you cross-country ski race, and the best ski jumper gets to start first, and everyone else chases after them based on their time. They're going to be holding that out at Tower Ridge I don't know how, because it's pretty icy there, but it'll be a very flat course, I'm sure.
I can't picture cross-country skiing with those giant 20-foot-long, 5-inch-wide boards on their feet.
They have to have two sets of equipment. Yeah.
Oh, they do?
They have
okay.
the big boards, and they have to train. It's an interesting discipline because the jumping part is more like training for sprinting, and the cross-country skiing part is more like training for distance
marathons.
Running.
Yeah. Sure. And we're getting close to the top of the hour, but I guess just something that I wanted to ask the outdoor guys about. We've got a lot of discussion going on right now, debate about this weapons ban and guns and all that. Any thoughts on, any thoughts on that, gentlemen? Joe Knight?
Well, I'm not a gun expert. I am a gun owner. Most of the guns I own have two barrels, and they're side by side, and they're fairly light and open choke. So
right.
I don't have a semi-automatic gun with a banana clip. I don't see that in my future. I'm not sure. Given the price of ammunition, I couldn't even afford to practice with one because you 130 clip round, shoot 30 bullets, and that's about my budget for ammunition for the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Given with they're going up in price with the cost of metals going up, so I guess I don't really understand for sporting or
what about target
shooting?
Target shooting.
I don't know, maybe if you're an ex-Marine, I guess we can ask Dave. He is an ex-Marine.
What did you qualify when you were in the service?
You mean on the
shooting
range?
Yeah. Did you qualify expert?
Actually, I was in the intermediate. I think it was sharpshooter, expert, and I was sharpshooter. I did fire all those weapons when I was in the military, but that's the way I look at them, as weapons, mm-hmm. not as hunting firearms.
Mm-hmm.
They're built for one thing, military use. And I don't own one. I couldn't afford one at $1,500 to $2,000 a crack. If I did want one, and I don't want one, I wouldn't hunt with one. I have firearms in the house. I like Joe. I got some side by sides and so forth, and other guns that mean a lot to me. They've been part of my family's history for years, and I think the large clips and I don't know. I haven't run into anybody out in the woods using those. Have you, Joe?
In one case, there was a young man who he was just learning to deer hunt, and his dad bought him some kind of light, I guess we'd call it an assault rifle, big clip, semi-automatic. And he said he got it for him because it was light and it was secondhand. It was relatively inexpensive. So I guess that might be a legitimate use. Actually, for deer hunting, I almost wish we had the same rules as we have for duck hunting, where you're only allowed three shells. It's partly conservation, but I think if all deer hunters were limited to three bullets in their clip, I think we'd shoot just as many deer and have fewer wounded deer and fewer hunting accidents.
Yeah. I've never taken more than one shot at a deer myself, it's an interesting conversation.
I'm for the strong regulation too of registering, background checks is what I'm trying to say, at gun shows and so forth. I think it's that time to do those types of things. I don't see why not. It's a good way to record, and we... it's not a hardship. We in the conservation community hold hundreds and hundreds of banquets, fundraising banquets, and one of the primary attractions are the gun auctions and giveaways. On the spot, we're required to dial in for a background check. And if there's a pistol involved, that's a three-day wait, just as it would be at a store. It's no inconvenience. It's a matter of dialing in. Rarely, in all the years I've been affiliated with banquets, have I heard about somebody whose background check on the spot advised do not give that gun to that individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I know of several cases where it has happened. So we're part of that system. It's worked fine for us. It should work fine for gun shows, too. And if it comes down to it, individual sales as well. It why not? Why not be sure rather than be sorry?
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well, that just about does it. We've got about a minute left to go. Any final thoughts?
One thing about ice fishing, and I wrote this in a column that'll run tomorrow, is that Sunday it's going to be really cold, and just because the legislature says you can't absolutely free go out in the middle of a lake in January and stare through a hole in the ice, it doesn't mean you have to take them up on the offer. There's plenty of other days of winter left.
Right. Well,
one person described ice fishing to me as kind of like sitting beneath a chimney and trying to shoot ducks as they fly over, looking up the fireplace there. You do have to move around. Hey, and enjoy those ladies talking tonight about fly fishing at Gander Mountain on Highway 53 in Eau Claire, 7 o'clock in the community room there, talking about ice fishing. Get out and enjoy their talk.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. Joe Knight, outdoor writer for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, Dave Carlson, host of Northland Adventures. Another big thanks for Margaret Labine, Sarah Sanford, and Wendy Williamson stopping by. We'll be back again next week with a look at higher education in western Wisconsin.